Hello, I'm Katie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're all booked.
Welcome back to another episode of Sterling Municipal Library's podcast, where we talk to you about books we'd like to recommend.
And we are trying to move on to semi-happy topics these days. And Chasley is bringing with her a book about feeling good. It is self-help, right?
It is a self-help book, which will be an interesting review because I've never read a self-help book before.
Oh, wow.
So, like, I can't, like, compare it to other self-help books. But on the other hand, I read this entire book. So that's, like, a recommendation right there.
It's a pretty chunky book, especially for a self-help book.
Yes, yeah. It is, though I think it's chunkier than it appears because, like, the last part of it is all, like, different medications. And so, like, you can take off about 50 or 100 pages.
Oh, okay. There you go.
But it makes for a good audiobook, too, which is very weird. Okay, well, let me tell you what the
book is. Yeah, because it almost looks clinical. So go ahead and tell me.
Yes. Okay. So the title is Feeling Good, The New Mood Therapy by Dr. David D. Burns, MD. The reason I've never read a self-help book before, I read fiction and I read nonfiction, but, like, I read for the story. So if you can spin, like, a historical narrative into a wonderful story, biographies and memoirs, perfect. But I've never picked up a self-help book before. Not because I don't need help. We all know that's not the case. but because when I envisioned it, I was like, there's no story here.
Well, and it doesn't help, I think, that some self-help books look inherently very cheesy on the outside.
Or, like, medical. Like, this is looks different from a textbook.
Or it reminds me of those books that are, like, pharmacy reference guides.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. And the surprising thing is he fills it with stories and makes it very readable.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. His own experiences, but also his clients/patients in his therapy. He takes some of them, there's 100 pages where they come up again and again, and he talks about their progress, and he uses them to illustrate these methods, and so to kind of show you. He even does dialogue. Like, he has, like, a whole thing where it's, this guy says it, this guy says, this guy says, this guy says, so that you get, like, the flow of conversation, and it draws you into an actual narrative.
Wow, because this, I do not get that feeling at all looking
at
it.
So. Yes, yeah, it has been mismarketed. And it's been around for a really long time.
I was about to ask
how
you discovered
it. I also get that from the cover.
yeah. I came across it because I was looking for a family member who has been experiencing some stuff, and I was like, maybe I can read some stuff and be helpful, but also for me, because, like, I've suffered from depression and anxiety, and so, like, if I can read something that is helpful to me and helpful to this other person, then, you know, that's definitely worth giving a shot. So as I started looking at stuff again and again and again, I came back to references to this book as being, like, the one that I should read. And what he's talking about is cognitive behavioral therapy. And it's, like, a very basic, like, introduction to that, because he was one of, like, the original developers of it and trying to, you know, start the spread of it. Now it's very
mainstream.
Common.
Yeah,
absolutely. But when he's talking, it was revolutionary. And so the idea is that your emotions are not a real thing. Like, your thoughts are real, and if your thoughts are connected to reality, then your emotions come under your control a bit better.
Yeah.
And he's not talking about repressing your emotions. He's talking about using your mind to think more clearly so that your emotions aren't in control of you.
Yeah, basically even just recognizing or sitting back and recognizing the emotions that are doing you more harm than good.
Exactly.
Because sometimes it is easy to get stuck in negative or toxic emotional patterns if you're not aware of what's happening.
Absolutely. And one of the most interesting things that I think he does is he gives you this method of writing down, I want to call them your crazy person thoughts, because that's what I think of mine, and he calls them automatic thoughts. They're thoughts that just, you know, come in, like, you'll be like, oh, it's Monday again, that kind of thing. The normal things that come into your brain. And then he has a list of what he calls cognitive distortions, which I can only tell you because I'm just now looking at the book. I can never remember that word. What I'm always thinking when I see it is logical fallacies. And so this person's automatic thought is, everyone knows how disorganized I'm, selfish I am. The cognitive distortion, so you write that down, then you pick out your cognitive distortion from the list. It's very academic, like, kind of like approach to it, which I like. That appeals to me.
Yeah.
And so you pick out your cognitive distortion. This one is jumping to conclusions and mind reading. He says you can't know what another person's thinking. So anytime you say this is what this person thinks, unless they've said it to you out loud, you don't know that. That's not something that you can claim. And then you take these two things and then you form a rational response, which he also calls your self-defense. So it's almost like a legal approach to it.
Yeah.
Like, you say this thing, no, I'm going to come back at you with the truth. And their rational response was, I am disorganized at times and I'm organized at times. Everybody doesn't think the same way about me, and, you know, goes on from there. It sounds a little cheesy, But he's like, and he says, hey, that sounds a little cheesy. But the really amazing thing is that when you sit down for, you know, several days in a row, I think he recommends 3 weeks. And when those thoughts come up, we sit down for like 10 minutes a day and you write them down and you, you know, think about them clearly and you write out the actual response and you save that so that you can come back to it. And you, what you do is you end up reading back down through it and you see the habits that your brain is in and you see like a good response that keeps coming up to that. And mm-hmm. so it becomes almost natural without trying that you turn that automatic thought into a more rational thought. And then that helps you emotionally.
I am just now realizing that I've read a good chunk of this book before too.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But I had it on ebook, so I think the cover looked kind of yellow on my ebook version.
Yes.
The thing but is, as soon as you started describing the different like table, I was like, I've even done that table before. Yeah. It is really helpful.
It is super helpful. Yeah. It's been around for a long time, like I said, so lots of editions.
Yeah.
The cover has come out in lots of different ways. I do have a really cool quote from the book here that I think really helps describe it and also kind of shows you his style, like as he's doing his little storytelling there. Now, he saw this illusionist, and the illusionist tricked him when he was a child, and he was like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. And he said, now I know that his ability as an illusionist was no greater than that of the average depressed patient. This includes you. When you are depressed, you possess the remarkable ability to believe and to get the people around you to believe things which have no basis in reality. As a therapist, it's my job to penetrate the illusion, to teach you how to look behind the mirrors so you can see how you've been fooling yourself. You might even say that I'm planning to disillusion you. But I don't think you're going to mind at all. So he's super cute and cheesy. Mm-hmm. And he has a really good TED Talk, too. If you're not into reading the whole book, you can look him up, David Burns. And he talks a lot about this theory, the cognitive behavioral therapy, and how it works and how it's worked for a lot of the people that he's helped with it.
And one thing that's nice about making it seem more scientific or logical or clinical is it kind of takes away the scary aspect of, ooh, I'm going to see a therapist. That's not necessarily something that needs to be taboo. It's mm-hmm. just like seeing a specialist for any other medical condition. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, yeah. And he goes in the beginning of this and talks about bibliotherapy, which is my new favorite word. He, you know, talks about like the validity of self-help books. You know, that not only is it more approachable for people and more affordable for people, especially if you use your public library, but the fact that it's effective.
Yeah.
Which I did not know.
And especially with things like this, sometimes it's better to start on your own if you don't feel comfortable going to someone else.
Definitely. I mean, if your option is, I'm not going to go to somebody.
Yeah, either I won't go or I'll work in secret.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
And I find that there are a lot of things that you can do that seem very cheesy, but are actually like supposed to help you. Like even stuff as like silly sounding as like power stances.
Yeah.
Like it sounds so silly, but for some people, if you stand like Wonder Woman for like 15 seconds, then you're like, I got this.
Yeah, it is almost like that illusion. Like,
yeah,
you know,
tricking your brain into thinking.
Tricking your brain. Yeah. That's all we need.
But I mean, even with what you were talking about, the cognitive dissonance, a lot of times it's just increasing your own awareness so that you even have a chance to defend yourself against it. Because otherwise your natural habit has been just to let these things spiral out of control inside of you to where they basically drag you down.
Yes.
When
they really shouldn't have such a hold on them if you can find a way to combat them.
Absolutely. Okay, there were a couple of things I didn't like, if you're ready for that portion.
Yes, definitely. I love how you give us such a well-balanced approach to any books.
Thank you. Thank you. Nothing has all my praise. No, he does this thing where he'll be like, I'm not against the use of antidepressants, but then he'll go and say something that would somebody who's against the use of antidepressants would say, like, automatically. And he does it, like, 15 times throughout the entire book. So you can tell that, like, he believes that your first approach should be a non-medicative one, and that's fine if that's, you know, his stance on it. But yeah, if you were like reading the book and you were on the edge of like trying to decide, hey, do I need medication? Yeah, you shouldn't listen to him. You should probably listen to like a doctor. I mean, like he is a doctor, but like
but
your
one that
doctor.
Knows you and talks to you
and knows your specific circumstances.
Yes.
And he does do a really good job of being like, if you have these symptoms or if you have suicidal or homicidal thoughts, you need to put this book down and go consult a professional right now. Yeah. And so that's good, because
there are some things that books cannot fix. A real person needs to help.
Yes, bibliotherapy can only take you so far.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did he have any, or did you have any, I know this is your first, but have you added any more to your list of things that you want to check out next?
Not specifically, though I am really open to it now, and especially because they have a cognitive behavioral toolbox kind of book, and they have some for adults and for kids too.
Oh, okay.
And so taking a lot of the ideas he has here and then making them kind of like into worksheets. Mm-hmm. And so I've definitely bookmarked some of those as being stuff that I need to pick up because it's super helpful.
This is one of those things that I think is useful no matter what. Like, even if you don't suffer from depression or anxiety, any person has moments, like if you're about to go public speak or like anything like that, where you have bouts of like
doubt or whatever
or
it is.
That having a toolbox to like actually examine like your thought process and be like, okay, brain, you don't know everything. You haven't lived through every scenario. I don't need you to talk to me this way.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you have thoughts, I recommend this book to you.
Yes. Perfect.
Does he go into other mood disorders or is it just anxiety and depression?
Weirdly, it's kind of, I mean, like he does do some, but he actually spends a great bit of the book on low self-esteem because from his perspective, that's the thing that triggers depression and anxiety. Not in my case. I think I'm fantastic. But, like, I can see where he's
you
coming
are, Chasley.
From. Thank you. But, he does tackle anger issues, which was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes into some kind of, like, different topics. I think he spends a little time on narcissism. But it's not really, like, diagnosis specific.
Right.
Really. It's very much more just kind of, like, in general, let's take a look at your symptoms and see how we can manage them.
Mm-hmm. Narcissism feels like it would be hard to treat with a book because they may not.
You'd have to have a level of self-awareness there.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's the same thing of trying to like ground your thoughts in reality.
Yeah.
And he talks a lot about like some people who had manic depression. And so like they would have those like really manic episodes and you need help to be able to connect that to reality.
Yes.
And,
all right. I can't think of any other questions.
No, I think she did a great job explaining it.
Well, thank you for bringing us a book that is outside of your usual reading preferences, but it seemed pretty timely for given the circumstances
definitely.
Of the world right now.
Yes.
Yep, we could all use a little bit of a
little
mood
self-help
therapy right now.
And stay tuned next week for more fantastic book recommendations.
Bye.